So you talk about wounding, and then you talked about this man was your friend. So you weren't just.
Well, I was his. I don't know if I can say he was mine.
That's true. But at some point, I'm pretty sure y'all looked at each other as friends. So you weren't just wounded by your wife. You were also wounded by a friend. Tell me what healing looked like in order to be able to navigate that.
Sure. One of the things that I think is important that we do is bring language to the impact that infidelity and adultery has. It is betrayal trauma. And when we talk about trauma, trauma is not just your feelings being hurt. Kyle Shedd gave a working definition of trauma. It is an injury to the capacity to feel. So the feeling mechanisms, i.e. your nervous system, gets injured when you experience a trauma in the same way that a physical trauma alters and sometimes short circuits the way that the nerves move through the natural body. Well, that happens also when you experience an emotional trauma. So the first thing that I had to do, because I'm a man of faith, I'm a preacher, I'm a prophet of God, I've got, you know, all of these various pieces of my world are experiencing this impact from within the house, out of the house. There's also a degree of betrayal that's being experienced from church leadership that I'm entrusting to handle it like men of integrity, and that wasn't happening. So I had to have a conversation with myself. And number one, you're not going to spiritualize the recovery process. We tend to hyper-spiritualize emotional disassociation. So we demonize feelings, right? That if you're in faith, you don't let your feelings drive. And while there is a modicum of truth to that, that feelings should not be the driver, feelings have to be in the vehicle.
Right.
God gave us every feeling we have, the so-called negative feelings. God gave us the capacity to feel those too, to allow our internal world to have an avenue to be expressed. So I had a conversation with myself, you are going to feel this. You're not going to preach over it. You're not going to hyper-spiritualize it. You're going to feel it. And then I went to look for some natural support. We tend to try to relegate all healing work as people of faith solely to the confines of the church. And the church and the altar is an important place and an important part of the healing journey. But we are spirit, soul, and body.
Right.
That tripart reality requires then that there be a multidimensional confrontation on the wounding. And so I found a betrayal trauma expert to help me to understand. For me, I'm cognitive, so I need to understand what is happening.
Right.
Why am I, you know, why am I not able to eat? Why am I unable to sleep? Why are things being processed in this way? And did some deep work with Kristen Snowden, who is one of the leading experts on betrayal trauma, to really move myself through those various stages of healing.
And what was the answer to those questions? Why weren't you able to eat and why weren't you able to sleep? And the reason I ask is because there's a viewer listening right now that is literally going through their own version of navigating how to heal.
Sure.
And there's been, I can only imagine, somebody that's betrayed them and they're not able to eat, they're not able to sleep. So what is the language behind that?
Sure. So your brain is literally in fight, flight, freeze mode. You're in survival mode, literally. Betrayal trauma and adultery feels like your life is under attack, right? Especially where there is an authentic measure of love and a soul tie. We often talk about soul ties as though they are negative. There are positive soul ties. And within the context of a marriage, there should be a soul tie.
Right.
But where there's that ripping that is now happening, you're brought into survival brain and your brain is telling you eating and sleeping is not what's priority right now. You got to get safe. You are in danger. There's a threat against your life and you got to get safe. Well, imagine if someone were literally hunting you down to kill you. You're not worried about eating. You're not worried about sleeping. You're looking to see, you become hypervigilant. You're looking to see where's the attack coming from. So my brain had entered into that mode. I had to experience through, again, a process of time, there had to be a down regulating of that hyperactivity that had happened in my brain. And then I went, Jessica, then I went and so there was an extensive period of time that I couldn't sleep. And Kristen said to me, well, you need to go. I want to give you a referral to go to a psychiatrist so you can get some sleeping medication. Well, I'm a man of God. I lay hands on the sick by the grace of God and they recover. We literally in our ministry see tumors dry up on the spot. We've seen lumps dissipate immediately, deaf ears open. So I said, well, I'll go, but I'm not taking, you know, no medication. So I go and sit with a psychiatrist, and she's hearing me talk, and I'm also a marriage and couples counselor. So I've got all of the information flowing in this moment that I have heretofore been able to use to guide others through marital disruption that now I'm having to, right, apply. And she listens to me, and she says, okay. She said, well, I'm going to give you a prescription for mirtazapine. And I said, well, I'm not. I said, I don't need to take no medication. She says, Dr. Senegal, I hear you. All of that is wonderful, but you do. I said, no, I've given my spirit this amount of time before it gets back in the driver's seat. Mm-hmm. I said, my body is grieving right now. Mm-hmm. I said, but at this day, my spirit is going to kick into authority and my body will come subject. She says, that sounds great. And she said, I mean, no disrespect, but your body doesn't know what the blank she cusses you're talking about. I said, don't worry about it. I said, write your prescription. She writes the prescription. And on the day that I said this was going to be the deadline, I ate and slept like nothing had occurred. And so I allowed my body to undergo that initial phase of grieving. Of course, grieving happens along a spectrum of many phases and stages until my spirit man got back in the driver's seat.
Well, let me just stop you for a moment, because I do think that's a testament that, one, you were being willing to go to therapy, because I think a lot of men, especially African-American men, I think that there is it's somewhat taboo in our community to really talk about that, especially being a man of faith, because like you just mentioned, I feel like when it comes to faith, it's easy to say, well, God can heal everything. God can take over this. God has the ultimate power. So there is no need to do that. So you never took the medicine at all?
I did not take the medication, no. Okay. But I continued through therapy.
Okay.
Right? And being a man of faith, because that is absolutely, you know, a consciousness that we have created, that really our ego was woven into that, being a man, being a black man, and then being a man of faith, that our sense of masculinity requires that we be totally independent, and we can theologize that hyper-independence. God is going to take care of it. So it's not God plus therapy, it is God through therapy, that these become vehicles that God is able to use the wisdom that experts have in order to move us through the healing process.
So what does the healing process look like for somebody who is currently navigating this?
Yeah, number one, you really got to come to terms with what it presently means, what the impact to your marriage presently is. Here's how this is going to change things. Because when you're experiencing that disruption, it's not just impacting the present. It has impact on the future. What is your future going to look like? And where you have not conceptualized a reality or a future that doesn't include that person, now you are brought into a state of, again, dysregulation. You're having to find a new sense of security around the future. So I had to sit comfortably for a while with not knowing what the future looked like, which for me brought a different level of discomfort, because I'm a prophet of God. I look into the future as a part of my assignment. But where the security is built in relationship with God and not in the circumstances, then even when I don't know the details, I rest in knowing that I walk with the one who knows. So number one, go ahead.
Well, no.
Okay. So number one, you got to accept the present impact. Number two, you got to accept that it is going to alter whatever the future looks like. Number three, you got to own how you are emotionally and psychologically impacted in that moment. If you deny that, the impact of that is going to show up in your future. You're going to make future relationships pay. Your nervous system is going to stay stuck in the injury that you've just experienced, and all of your future decisions, you'll begin to dress it up as discernment. You'll dress it up as the leading of the Lord, and it will be the leading of your traumatized nervous system that begins to make your relational decisions. And you need to get with a marriage and couples counselor to do some therapy to walk you through that work.
So you mentioned that you were a prophet. Okay. Well, you are a prophet, but in the prophetic realm, there's something called a seer. Okay. So let me ask you this. When your wife was committing infidelity, did you see it? You knew?
Looking for a fun night out? K1 Speed puts you behind the wheel for an adrenaline-filled time you and your friends will never forget. Off the track, the fun keeps rolling with arcade games, great food, and drinks. They even have private party rooms for your birthday parties and corporate outings. Race hard, laugh harder, and claim your spot on the podium. K1 Speed. More than racing, it's an experience.